fourth case for argument this morning is United States against Riley. Mr. Walsh.
Good morning. Mr. Riley raises three issues on appeal. He had entered a conditional plea of guilty, reserving his right to contest the denial of his motion to suppress, and that's the initial issue that I want to address. In this particular case, we contend that there was absolutely no probable cause for the Moline Police Department to stop, arrest, and then search Mr. Riley and his vehicle. In this particular case, on July 23 of 04, in the early morning, there had been some activity at a bank in Moline, the Mississippi Valley Credit Union. For some reason, that gets into the record. I believe that's really a total red herring, because by 9:45, all of that had been resolved. The detective testified that he knew that there had been no illegal activity and that it had been totally resolved. At 10:30, he's on his normal routine patrol. The only thing he observes is while going through the parking lot at the Blackhawk State Bank, a different bank, he sees a car parked across the street in a different parking lot, backed into a parking space with a person in the driver's seat who he says looks nervous. The engine's running. A little bit later, he sees the defendant walk out of the Blackhawk State Bank, walk across the street, get into the car drives off.
Now, are we permitted to take into consideration, and was the district court permitted to take into consideration, Mr. Walsh, the relative experience of this particular officer in assessing what he saw at that bank?
Yes, that's always one of the issues, what experience the officer has. However, in this particular case, you have to also look at what observations he saw and what knowledge he did have. And he saw this car, and then he saw the car drive off, and it drives a mile to a mile and a half. He observes no traffic violations.
Before we get there, sir, again, if we could just stay at the bank for a minute, could the officer have gotten out of his car and walked up to the window of the parked car with the driver sitting there and the engine running and said, "Excuse me, sir, may I ask you a few questions? Why are you here? Are you waiting for someone? What is your business here?" Could he have done that?
If he just walked up and asked questions without any exercise of authority or placing anybody under arrest, yes, he could do that.
Could he have blocked the way of the car? Could he have parked his squad, his police car in front of the car so it really couldn't leave?
I think that might create an issue of whether there was a seizure at that point.
I see. Thank you.
But that didn't happen.
I understand.
And all we see is a car drive a mile to a mile and a half, no traffic violations. The officer has a radio. The officer has a telephone. He gets no calls, no alarms, no knowledge of any illegal activity. He sees the car pull into a gas station. The driver and the defendant trade places and again drive off and go another mile to a mile and a half.
Don't you think that's a little odd?
Not that odd. I think a lot of people trade places for various reasons. I mean, I've traded places with my wife, and I'm sure a lot of people have traded places from time to time. There is a specific case we cite in our brief where the Illinois Appellate Court found that that wasn't suspicious at all of the driver and passenger.
Maybe just in and of itself it isn't, but here right. With the defendant coming out of the bank carrying something, the car not parked right next to the bank but parked in this other spot a little ways away with the motor running and the driver looking around, it's pretty good cop work, I think.
You probably can say in almost every case where a police officer ultimately finds illegal activity as a result of the stop that he makes that it was good police work.
Oh, he was looking an apple and he found an orange. But
the problem is, does he have probable cause? Does he have the right to make the stop, the arrest, the search, the seizure? In this particular case, we say he saw nothing. He didn't even seek to determine whether there had been any illegal activity. He didn't make any calls. He didn't use his radio. Didn't use his phone. He knew of no illegal activity whatsoever. It's just his suspicion. And based on that, he uses his lights, his badge, and he stops the car and makes the search. We suggest that under the cases we cited, that was a totally illegal stop, search, and seizure. There are two other issues that I want to touch on briefly, and that is, number one, the sentencing. The court made its determination on the guidelines and found an 11 points instead of the 7 points that we had argued for based on the actual loss. The actual loss was $1,800, not the $11,700 the court found as the intended loss. We suggest that that is clear error based especially on what the court had learned from the plea and the testimony of the defendant. And the last point is the fine that was imposed. The pre-sentence report was very clear. The defendant had no assets, had no ability to pay any fine.
So why are you worried about the fine?
Because he hasn't paid it. Judge,
ability to pay the fine, then he won't pay the fine.
That's probably...
It's very peculiar to object to something that can't injure your client.
Well, it can't injure the client because if a judgment stays out there, Judge, it just hangs on for years.
Well, then maybe he will have some ability to pay the fine, but if he does, then he ought to pay it.
The point is, Judge, that the statute requires the court to make certain findings, to make certain inquiries. The court did none of that, particularly when the pre-sentence report said that he had no assets and no ability. The fine is relatively small in the scheme of things. It's $1,500. But it's real, and it's something that shouldn't have been done. And we believe that that should be set aside. I'll reserve the rest of my time, Judge, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Walsh.
May it please the court, my name is Linda Mullen and I represent the United States. I plan to confine my comments this morning to the Fourth Amendment issue, but would be happy to answer any questions that you may have with respect to either of the sentencing issues raised by Mr. Riley. Our position in this case is that what we have on the front end here is heads-up, excellent police work. And what we have on the back end is a very minimal intrusion that lasted mere seconds before the officer had probable cause to arrest Mr. Riley. As Judge Evans pointed out in his questioning of counsel, on the front end, we have a very experienced detective here. He is canvassing local banks, as is his practice over his 30 years of experience, sees a car parked not in the bank parking lot, but in the adjacent parking lot, and backed into the parking space rather than parked the way that all the other cars are parked. Its motor is running, and the occupant, the driver of that car, is looking not toward the restaurant that is adjacent to that parking lot, but toward the bank. This aroused Detective Rainey's suspicions. In his experience, getaway cars for bank robberies often park near but not at the bank. They do that, obviously, to avoid any eyewitness testimony, any cameras that might be at the bank. The officer saw that the driver kept glancing toward the entrance to the bank, then minutes later saw Mr. Riley exit the bank, walk hurriedly over to the car, enter the passenger seat, and the car drive away. At that point, he began to follow the car. He did use his cell phone and called another officer. That officer said, "There are no marked squads in the area, but I will attempt to assist you." The detective followed the car. About 10 blocks later, the car pulled into a gas station. And again, this aroused the detective's suspicion because they didn't get gas. And they could have switched drivers back at the bank, but waited until they were safe distance.
You talk about articulable suspicion in the cases. Can you articulate a reason as to why that is suspicious, changing the drivers?
I think that the detective found that that was fishy, that that was suspicious, because the two seemed to be in a hurry back at the bank and yet did not switch places at the bank but waited until they were a safe distance away.
I see.
We know in retrospect it could have been because one had the revoked license, and
nice.
While he was poised to be the getaway driver, they wanted to switch the drivers again so as not to run afoul of the law at that point. The detective then waited until the car was stopped at a red light before approaching the car.
Does the record reflect what the cycle of the light was, how long it took for the light to change?
It does not, Your Honor, but what we do know, what the record does reflect, is that when Detective Rania approached the driver of that stopped vehicle, at that point the light was still red. He did testify to that. He said when he approached the vehicle, he had to tap on the window, actually, to get the occupant's attention. It was not clear in the record that they understood that he was even behind them. It's also not clear from the record whether Detective Rania was immediately behind that car or perhaps a car or two behind. They were turning left at a red light in that left turn lane. Detective Rania tapped on the window to get their attention, asked for the driver's license and proof of insurance, said that immediately the driver of the car, Mr. Riley, reached to the glove compartment, pulled those out, and that's when he handed over the expired proof of insurance, and the detective at that point had probable cause that he had committed an offense. So again, our position in this case is that we have heads-up police work on the front end by a very experienced detective and a very brief, minimal intrusion on the back end that lasted only seconds.
Now, they retrieved a map in that car, did they not?
There was a map to the local banks, the other local banks in the area.
How many banks were marked on the map?
Can't recall the answer to that. I do know that there were several and that he had...
That would support your argument that the other checks that he intended to eventually... cash the other checks, would it not?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And he had deposit slips already made out for those checks. So he had a map to local banks.
But the record doesn't show any correlation between the checks, or at least nobody has made a correlation between the checks and the map.
That's correct. No one made that correlation. But he did have the deposit slips for all of the other checks and had already negotiated two of those checks at the time that he was apprehended. And, of course, under the case law, we look at intended loss, not actual loss, and that's what the district court did here.
The district court also seems to waffle on whether or not there was a seizure here. Do you think there was a seizure here?
I think what the district court... No, we don't, first of all, is my short answer to your question, Judge Ripple. But I think that what the district court was saying... I'm not sure the district court was waffling, but I do think that the district court focused on the fact that this was a car that was already stopped at the stoplight, had no intention of going anywhere at that point. And I think what the court was saying is this was not a car that was moving and pulled over. This was a car that was already stopped, so it's not clear on this record that this would have been a seizure, and it's not clear on the record that the car attempted to leave at any point. And I think that was Judge McDade's point with respect to that.
If I may go back to the bank where he initially saw these folks and ask you the same question I asked your colleague, could the officer have simply walked up to the car and asked a question at that point?
Absolutely.
Could he have placed his vehicle in front of the other vehicle at that point?
I believe,
to prevent it from leaving?
If the vehicle was parked in a way that did, in fact, prevent him from leaving, that would be a closer question. Those facts are very close to the Douglas case out of this court, the very recent Douglas case, where the defendant was parked in a parking lot, the engine running, his headlights on, it was in the middle of the night, I believe 2:30 in the morning, had his hands on the wheel, and the officers drove the car mm-hmm. nose to nose with that vehicle,
right,
and then flanked the vehicle, and that was considered to be a consensual encounter. Now, this court acknowledged that had the defendant been blocked in by several cars, that could have been a different situation, but because the driver of the car was exactly where he wanted to be, which was parked in the parking lot, that the mere approaching the car by the officers did not amount to a seizure, and that's essentially what we're arguing here, is we already have a car legitimately and appropriately stopped at a red light on a public roadway, and the officer
stopped at a red light was not where he wanted to be for the rest of the day, or even for more than the time till the light turned green.
Well, that's right, Your Honor. It's certainly not a place he wanted to stay for the rest of the day, but he was stopped because he chose to stop to obey the traffic laws, and that's our position with respect to that. If the court has no further questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Walsh?
Just a couple of words, Judge.
Please come to the microphone before speaking.
First of all, I disagree that the car was parked in an adjacent parking lot. It was parked across the street at a restaurant. The officer did nothing about the car parked at the restaurant except observe it. He did nothing except observe Mr. Riley walk across the street and get in the car. He did not see him. Mr. Riley's not wearing any kind of a disguise, no hoods, no masks. There's nothing except the fact that he walks across, gets into the car, and the car drives off, and it drives a mile or a mile and a half. No traffic violations. The officer is very clear about that, and he doesn't have any evidence of any illegality. Now, when the car is stopped legally at a red light, which it's supposed to do, the officer comes up, emergency lights, his badge, he exercises his authority. We clearly suggest that is a seizure, and that is a seizure without probable cause. I don't believe this officer had any real articulable reasons to believe that a crime had been committed at that time, and had no articulable reasons to make inquiry of the driver. With that, I'll end my statement, Judge. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.